Blog Talk Radio.
I am Jesus Christ.
No, you're not. You're dead.
May 14th, 2013. This is another edition of Imperium Europa, here with your host Dana Antiochus. And you know, I kind of again last minute put a show together. Things worked out perfectly because I went onto Facebook and I got a message from my old friend. This is the guy we're going to be interviewing and having a discussion with tonight. He goes by the handle Iranian for Aryans. He is of Persian descent, and that is, his website is iranianforaryans.com. He's a pro-white, pro-Western person of Middle Eastern origin, Persian, Iran, and you know, it should be an interesting conversation because I have talked with him in person before. I've been friends with him for a while, and he's a really intelligent person. You know, he's got a good head on his shoulders, intelligent young man. So I'm going to bring him up without further ado and start this show off here.
Hi, Dana.
IFA, you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing today?
All right, excellent. So this worked out perfectly because I was just telling the listeners, I kind of, you saved me in a way, because it's always easier to have a you know, a guest on, it makes the show flow smoother. And, you know, my notes are all scrambled. I'm trying to do 10 things at once, but very happy to have you online. And I guess maybe you should just introduce yourself to the audience if they haven't already heard of you.
Well, thank you, Dana. I am very happy to be here. Thank you for offering to have me on your interesting show. I am Iranian for Aryans, and I have been living in the United States since 1984. I am of Iranian descent from the capital of Iran, Tehran, and I have loved my stay in America thus far. I should say probably up to a point with some caveats thrown in there as far as the race issue is concerned and some other cultural issues as well. But I have been blogging since 2004. I have a very, very minute following on the web. I speak mostly, I write mostly about cultural issues, and I do have a funny page about the shenanigans of blacks and their TNB, which I think some of the viewers might find interesting as well. But I would be more than happy to answer questions that you might want to pose to me during this interview.
Absolutely. I first heard of you through the old Voice of Reason radio network, which was, I think the website was reasonradio.com. Robert Stark interviewed you. I don't know if he did two with you or one, but you were on there a couple times, I think. And I was impressed. You know, that's when I reached out to you, and it turned out that I was already your Facebook friend for quite some time. So,
yes, you were. Yes, you were. I might add that I was interviewed once by him, by Robert. And I recall you telling me that the thing that interested you about our my interview with Robert was that I was very upfront and frank about the shenanigans of the group of to whom I belong, namely the Iranian community here in America. I have always admired individuals, especially Jews, who can go ahead and say, hey, listen, I might be Jewish, but what the Jews are doing is wrong, and they're a dirty bunch. I'm specifically thinking of Brother Nathaniel Kapner, Israel Shamir, Friedman from back in the 60s, as well as another individual whose name I can't recall at the moment. Gilad Atzmon is another one,
yep,
too. So there are a few righteous, good human beings out there who happen to be Jewish, and they either give up their Jewishness to become Christians, or they do not openly nor covertly fight against Western and ultimately white racial survival. So I tip my hat off to those intellectuals and those gentlemen, be they living or be they dead. And if I might be presumptuous and pretentious enough, I will say that I would like to think that I belong to a group like that, because though Iranians as a community are not as, if you will, advanced in wiliness and cunning as the tribe, they do add to an anti-American and ultimately anti-white motive, an anti-white force in the United States and in Western Europe. I'm afraid to admit, I really don't want to say that, but I think the truth takes paramount importance, and I should be able, and others should be able, to essentially look in the closet and pull out the skeletons, analyze them, and say this must change.
Well, it's hard to really define it because, you know, anti-white is kind of a broad term. It can be conflated with anti-Western. And the way I look at it is the West is so decadent, corrupt, and controlled by Jews right now. You know, if you're a white nationalist, you kind of have to be anti-Western because the way, you know, the society is set up and the structure of our governments and everything, you know, the enemies are ruling the land. You know, we gave the keys of the kingdom away to our greatest foes, and this is no longer our own country. And, you know, I look at the system as being anti-white. So, you know, it can get confusing, you know, if you know what I'm saying. But.
Well, I know, I understand your point. And essentially, when I say anti-Western, I mean Western in the traditional sense of the West being synonymous with white survival, with European people's survival, so that when Iranians come here to the United States, and this includes Armenians as well. I'm not saying just because Iranians are the Muslims, that's an issue too. Armenians are Christians, but Armenians also who come here, essentially white people or majority white people who are from non-European lands, for example, central, but well, parts of the Caucasus and the Levant and the Middle East, who come here do not see themselves as part of a greater Europe, and they do not see themselves as members of necessarily of the white race, even though if you talk to them, they will say, I'm white. Iranians actually boast about being Aryans, having the same relationship with Germans, especially from the Third Reich period. But they don't act it, and when they form, for example, Armenian associations or Iranian-American associations, they openly strive for Iranian and Armenian interests as opposed to white racial interests. And ultimately, I think this is not a good influence. You can't have any kind of petty nationalism anymore for various peoples of Caucasian or Europoid or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call them, any kind of division like that. So that is one thing that I can talk about quite profusely if you want me to, but I will, again, let you ask the questions. You are the...
Oh, that's an... I mean, we can go right from there, because you're clearly a racialist in that respect, and that's how I think, too. But, you know, I mean, this is an argument we have a lot, because, you know, white, you have white nationalism, which is a very kind of broad concept, and then you have ethno-nationalism, which, in my opinion, they shouldn't be at odds with each other. They should kind of complement each other instead of being opposed. And you know, everybody, every ethnic group, whether inside or outside Europe, you know, strive to preserve itself and its cultural and racial integrity. But at the same time, we should look at ourselves within a wider perspective of race. You know, and unfortunately, sometimes these two things collide, and they shouldn't. But I know exactly what you're saying. See, I'm actually, I'm one quarter. My grandmother was from Iran. She was a Syrian from Iran. But when she came, she intermixed with, my grandfather was Italian and Greek on my mother's side. And then my father's blonde, blue-eyed Italian. So, you know, I just became part of this white American concept through all the intermixture, you know, Mediterranean albite. But, you know, it was, I know what you mean by saying when they, a lot of these people, when they come here, they're not looking at it from a perspective of, oh, okay, I'm Western, I'm white. You know, they hold on strongly to their ethnicity, wherever it may be, you know, and more outside Europe than inside Europe, usually. But, you know, I think at some point we have to find a way to get people to think racially and at the same time, you know, be proud of their culture, who they are, where they come from, but not have it conflict with a wider Indo-European. And I use Indo because, you know, it's, you know, I like to tell people that, you know, the only, you know, Europe isn't the only place where there are white people or Indo-European people, but, you know, it gets hard for some white nationalists to understand that, but go ahead. You can go off from there. I mean.
Oh, well, thank you. No, what I am not calling for is a massive influx of Iranians or Azerbaijanis or Armenians into this country. I'm not asking for that at all. I'm not advocating for that. However, those who do come to America, like your parents and grandparents, who actually amalgamated with the native population and with other European people, America is, in a white, ethno-white sense, it is the imperium, European imperium, where all European peoples essentially mix together. And the inimical nature between, say, Serb and Croat, between Italian and Greek, all of this is no longer present in the new imperium called America. America has that blessing that it will allow, and hopefully what we wanted in the past as well, was for European peoples, the Greek, to be friendly with the German and the Finn and the Italian and the Bulgarian. This is ultimately what is America's strength, I think, in the ethnic sense. Unfortunately, though, nationalism still resides. And nationalisms are very petty. And one of the aspects of National Socialism that I'm very antagonistic towards is the petty German nationalism of the 19th century. I don't think right now the white race is in any place position to wag fingers and say, we'll do this or we'll do that, etc. These are all ultimately, and I'm somewhat of a cynic when it comes to this, but this is ultimately a pipe dream. We are in no position to say what we're going to do because we have no power. and we are nebulized and very, we are defeated, essentially. Whether there will be an ability for a resurrection of a Western and white culture and civilization is dubious at best. But at this point, I think the future is very, very dim. Notwithstanding, Dana, I do sense that one aspect, one problem with National Socialism was the pettiness of German nationalism. That has to end. That has to come to an end. This does not mean, however, that Mediterraneans will flood Nordic countries and vice versa, and that there will be massive intra-mixture between, say, Nordics and Mediterraneans. I do consider myself, and I know I'll probably get some problems and some naysayers from what I'm going to say, but I do consider myself a Nordicist, meaning that I do believe that of all white groups, the Nordic or Nordish or whatever you want to call it, the fair complexion of people are the most advanced. They are essentially the founders of Western civilization and culture. However, that notwithstanding, that does not mean that there's going to be any kind of mean-spirited or titanic lording over various non-Nordic people. And I might add that my dream, like yours and like many others, is a Europe, is a white world of nations that are subsumed, that are amalgamated into one imperium, so that all the nations, Hungary, Slovakia, Romania, Poland, Finland, and so on and so forth, even countries like Armenia that aren't historically part of Europe or European culture, would be part of the new West, the new Occident, Russia as well. This, of course, I think is a pipe dream, but I think that this is ideally what we want.
Absolutely. I feel the same way. You know, it's the ultimate goal kind of thing. You know, if we say at the end of the road what we want is, you know, a grand imperium. You know, a lot of people argue over, well, what's better, big or small? And some people say the small model, the localized model, is the best, because once you become an empire, you're overstretched and you take on foreign people. But, you know, we're talking about an empire of Aryans, essentially, an empire of Indo-European people. And
we are.
You know, if you look at the language, in the 19th century, Max Müller and all these German anthropologists and people, they were studying the Aryan languages, and they showed how they're all interrelated, and we probably most likely have a common origin. So,
yes, if I may interject, I might add that the Habsburg dynasty that Hitler railed against so much and was a force against nationalism, in my opinion, the Austro-Hungarian Empire was great because it united the Austrians, the Hungarians, the Croats, the Ruthenians, the Slovaks. It put all of these European nationalities under one flag and under one imperium. And what we need is for all of Europe, like the Holy Roman Empire, to be put under one imperium. Now, whether the capital will be ultimately Vienna or Berlin or Rome is irrelevant. The issue is that there will be no more space nor any more toleration for any kind of petty nationalism where Romanians go in the streets and beat up Hungarians or Serbs and Croats go and genocide one another. None of that pettiness. Yeah. It will be with an iron fist. It will be put down so that these European peoples will work together. The interests will be the same, and that they will have one common enemy, one Leviathan that they will be against. And this is ideally, I think, what the whole white nationalist movement is striving for. Whether it will be a reality or not, only God knows. I am very dubious about this. I do think we are in what the Hindus call the Kali Yuga, the Dark Age, and this essentially everything will become worse and worse. And a prime example of this is we miscegenate with blacks, and I can actually think there are some people that say blacks are a different species. I'm willing to accept that, and there is no doubt that they are an inferior race, and you just have to look at their faces, and that basically says everything you need to know about them. And
We don't even need to structure the argument within the confines of superiority, inferiority. I think that's important.
No.
You know, we have a right to exist as we are without change.
Do.
You know, and that's the
no,
point.
Assuredly.
You know, I just,
assuredly, Dana. Assuredly, Dana. I don't disagree with you one iota. However, part of the discussion is brutal frankness. And part of the brutal frankness is that when you look at a black physiognomy, you are looking at the missing link. If evolution is real, and I am an evolutionist, if evolution is real, the human races, as we all know, do not have equal ability. They evolved differently under different ecological and biological pressures and factors, and we have adapted accordingly. But when you look at a black physiognomy, my God, you are looking at sin incarnate. They are ugly. And these individuals, yeah, not only are we different, but I will go further and say we have to have the gumption, because the truth shall set us free, we have to have the gumption to say not only are we different, but we are better. We are better, and I'm sorry, it is not the mixing between a Chinaman and a Nordic woman is not the same as a mixing between a Congoid and a Nordic woman. They are
they're equally bad, in my opinion. I mean, I think the Asians, there is a hierarchy of races, and the Asians probably are definitely above the Negroid. But you have the out of Africa hypothesis as opposed to the multi-regional theory. And as white nationalists, I would assume we're all a fan of the multi-regional theory. And you had Carlton Kuhn, the old anthropologist. I mean, he estimated that Africans are 200,000 years behind Europeans in evolution.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't know.
Oh, yes.
You know, I don't know if it's right or not, but that's what he estimated. Hey, we have a caller. I'm going to try to give most of the time to you. I just want to see if they have to ask for something or what they
Thank
are.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's bring them up here.
Thank you.
This works. All right. 541, what's your name and where you're calling from? Hello, 541. Are you just listening, or did you want to get in on the conversation?
Yeah, yes, this is me. I'm just listening. I can't get it to stream. I don't know if other people can, but so I'm having to listen on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Your show isn't streaming for me.
It isn't streaming. And Kyle is asking me right here if everything's all right. Well, everything appears to be working fine. I don't know.
I'm just
getting
the classical music. But,
oh, well, let me see here. Jeez. You're only hearing classical music? Let's see.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's...
I'd love to not have to hold the phone and listen.
Yeah. This whole time, it's only been classical? You're not getting anything else?
Nothing
All right,
else.
Let me...
I'm out in the boondocks, and so sometimes it gets kind of overloaded at this time of day. But usually I can stream... Your shows.
Okay. All right. It says, Kyle is saying that he's only hearing Vivaldi the whole time.
Yeah, that's all I heard, Vivaldi.
Well, I'm glad you
it
called
was very
in
nice,
before
though.
We went any further. Yeah.
Yeah all right. Yeah.
Let me see what the problem is, because it's, to me, it looks like it's fine, because it says it's running. It's got 1 hour, 36 minutes remaining.
I know. You're
definitely
doing something.
I wonder what the problem is, because you know it was automatically scheduled to broadcast, and I had to go in there and reset it so that I could get into to do the thing. But let me see I don't know, because everything on my end looks like it's okay. You're not hearing anything. Kyle's not hearing anything. So let me. Jeez, this is a pain in the ass. You know,
it's a pain in the ass to have to hold the phone. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I apologize, miss. I'm sorry. Well, why don't you hang up and I don't know what I can do, because everything on my end looks okay.
Well, it's a great show. It's a shame for it not to be streaming. This is really
interesting. I mean, jeez. All right, I'm going to figure out what I can do. Maybe I can sign off and sign back in or something. I would hang up then, miss, if all you're hearing
well,
is...
I look forward to it. I hope it comes through.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, well, that's a shame. I don't understand what the problem is, because I set it up. Everything looks like it's okay. It says we're on air. I don't know what the problem is with the stream or what. I don't really know what to do now, because I don't know whether it's being recorded or not. It says it's okay, but from Kyle and her, I don't know. So, kind of in a bind. What do you think we should do, IFA?
I'm of the opinion that we, hopefully, if it's recording, it's recording. We can have our conversation, and then if it doesn't work, we can have it again next week if necessary. But perhaps we might hang up, then I might hang up and then go back into it again. Would that sort of quote-unquote reboot it? Would that work?
Yeah, we can try that. We can try that. I mean, the problem is I had to set up the show, but everything looks like it's fine to me. You know, the only problem is from her and from Kyle. He just told me that they're not hearing. So maybe it's recording and it's just not streaming and they're not actually hearing it. But it is. It will be up there for people to listen to for the download. So I just I would hesitate though to keep going if it's not.
Yes, and I turned on my speaker. Yes, I turned on the speaker and it is playing a Vivaldi violin concerto.
Okay, let me check here. Everyone's getting nothing. Only Vivaldi. I don't even know why it's playing Vivaldi. I didn't even set it up to play that song.
I can't complain.
I
can't complain about that.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Okay, I'm going to ask right now what we should do. Yeah, I mean, Kyle, he's saying hopefully it's recording. I'm guessing that it's a problem with Blog Talk and it's recording and it will be here for the download. So maybe we should just keep going.
Yes, please.
Because it to me it says on air, it says stream left 1 hour, 33 minutes. So,
yes.
You know, we're going to have to just go with that.
Surely.
All right. Okay, so as far as what you said regarding Imperium Europa and what America was, I agree with you. I think this is both a strength and a weakness because, it's a strength because we don't have the petty nationalism between white European peoples and even outlier peoples. You know, it's all kind of merges together. The problem with it is that they have desecrated our culture, uprooted us, and deracinated us to the point that now whites don't even have an identity. At all, period, in America.
Yes.
So at least in Europe, even though they might be petty nationalists at times, they're still, they're very strongly connected to their roots, their heritage, and who they are.
Oh, well,
so you got
to
find a happy
medium. Yes, to this very day, you can see that this some of these soccer tournaments, the Poles and the Russians were going at it with beer bottles, beating up each other and practically killing one another in the streets. When in the same town, you have blacks running around raping white women and North Africans doing the same, and here the Poles and the Russians are beating one another up. It is so asinine. When I saw this news article a few months ago, I was really appalled by this type of childishness. And churlishness, but nonetheless, about the issue of America and what has happened to the culture, I am of the opinion that when I came to America in 1984, what was American culture was rock and roll. It was then burgeoning rap. It was everything essentially that the Jews had made it be, and it is now the symbol. It is the spearhead, the vanguard of all kinds of the moral degeneracy, aesthetic decadence, and essentially everything the Jews have denigrated it to be, so that no longer is it any kind of bastion of Western culture, but it is something that has emanated from Madison Avenue and Hollywood as well. As you well know, this America, people do not look at America and say, oh, well, the paintings of Norman Rockwell or Grandma Moses, for example, or Johnny Appleseed. What they look at America for is Lady Gaga, Madonna, Rothko, all queer eye for the straight guy and all this trash like the Kardashians and whatnot. This is what they see. And this is essentially what America has become, Dana, as you well know. And it's a tragedy. It really is a tragedy. We are, America is right now the vanguard, the harbinger of devilry, of really satanic culture is what it is. And the mullahs are right when in Iran they call America the great Satan. They are right. Essentially, you don't have to believe in the devil, but it's analogous. It's the same concept. America is promoting decadence throughout the globe.
And that's what Ayatollah warned about to all peoples, really, because it's we are importing or exporting this culture through Hollywood to the rest of the world, and it's really having an effect. I mean, when I see Polish kids or Russian kids rapping, you know, and trying to act black hip-hop ghetto people, I mean, it really bothers me. And I see it even here. You have Ukrainian populations, Polish populations. I mentioned being a quarter Assyrian. I was in the Assyrian community as a child, and I would see a lot of them were into the hip hop, you know, the ghetto kind of thing. And you know, I said, geez, you guys are really I can't condone this activity. Yeah. It's just a shame though, because it's not only people who aren't white or on the borderline of being white, or it's the whitest of the white people. You know, you see blonde white people. Yeah. With the hat, and you know, it's just a shame. But that's what the Jews have done to us. That's their biggest, the biggest.
But you see, that's exactly true. That's what they have done to us. But at what point do we stop and say it's time that we stopped blaming the perpetrator of this soul or spirited crime? At what point do we stop and say, listen, okay, the Jews are guilty, and they are guilty. But the point is, at right now, if we didn't have the Jews, Lady Gaga would still be supremely popular. Madonna would still be listened to. Pornography would still be watched without Jews. We cannot have a society whereby we replace Jews, yet still listen to the filth and watch the filth that they are spewing out of New York City and Hollywood. We cannot have Aryan pornography. We cannot have pornography, period. We cannot have it. It's disruptive. And we cannot have Lady Gaga, whether it's a Nordic princess singing Lady Gaga or it's Amy Winehouse. We cannot have it. It's ultimately the essence of the situation is such that I think Western peoples have denigrated themselves so intensely and so excessively that at this point they no longer have the ability to discern between what is good and what is bad, and they will go with the bad. And I think that this right now is even out of the Jewish hands, because like an avalanche, it has gained so much momentum that if the Jew were to take his finger out of the pie, the flies would still be coming for the pie. It's still corrupt. We are sick to our very marrow as a people. We are spiritually degraded. We are terminally ill. I'm of that opinion.
Okay, I got word that we have somehow Renegade Broadcasting is streaming now, because my friend got into the stream. I don't really know how these guys do it, but it is on the stream. So I just wonder, should I bring, let me just ask really quick, should I bring this guy up? Should I bring you on live? Let's see. He's recording it. Let's see. Just want to make sure, because he is in and it is streaming. Okay, no need. All right, so we'll just continue, and hopefully, like I said, it is recording. It probably will be, so when people can go in, they can download it afterward and listen. All right. Yeah, you know, we were talking about culture and the degradation and the filth of what we see today. It's really a shame. You know, that's why I say that the only long-term solution is a top-down. We need control of our own states. You know, that's why I have a national socialist kind of perspective. You know, I mean, in the interim, you know, we have to be practical about it, though, and realize that we're not going to retake any of our governments. Unless, you know, Europe might be a different story. The United States federal government, I'm talking about in particular, we're not going to be taking that over unless it collapses or implodes from within. Yeah. And then we get a chance to gain some ground, you know. So that's why white nationalists are in a state of paralysis right now. You know, we're just like we don't know what to do. What should we do?
Well, I think I think ultimately, you know, the issue here is that we are nebulized. We are atomized. We talk about that. We might complain about the Madonna. We might complain about pornography. We might complain about massive immigration. But the relationship between man and woman, I'm talking about European man and woman, is completely obliterated. Women work. Women don't stay at home and have 7 or 8 kids anymore. People scoff at women having children. Well, how else are you going to work and have a viable race if women are not, excuse the vulgarity, chucking out kids? You look at the fundamentalist Mormon community in, for example, in Texas, in these areas where the women wear gingham dresses, they make their own outfits, they're survivalists, they have their own milling farm and agricultural lands. They are a state within a state. They are very religious, so they are very devoted, and they do believe in martyrdom and in fighting for their faith and their race. They are, both race and God are intertwined, which is what we need. And they also go ahead and have many, many children. And you look at traditional societies, they used to have many, many children. But what do we do now? Women are up to their neck in contraceptives. They are career-oriented as opposed to kitchen-oriented. And the whole idea of a woman being in a kitchen right now, and I'm talking about right-wing circles, the whole idea of a woman being in a kitchen is appalling. Appalling not only to the women, but to the men. To the men it is appalling. And why is it that so many white men go for Oriental women? Because they are complementary to the men and they are feminine. And this, of course, is not to say that every individual white woman is this way, but the fact, unfortunately, is that an overwhelming number of white women have gone this way. And this ultimately is the fault of the men, because I will state it here bluntly, that civilization and culture is patriarchal. It is not a partnership. It is not an equality forum. It is patriarchal, where the female obeys the man, like in the wedding ceremony. None of this stuff has changed. And I think that what we need is to go back to a 50s-esque sort of Harry and Ozzy, or whatever you call that show, a type of white picket fence mentality, of course, with certain things changed, a more of a national socialist, very conservative and traditionalist bent frame of mind. And that society worked much better than it does today. But again, I will be the first of, excuse me, you were saying.
Yeah, leave it to Beaver and Father knows
leave
best.
Leave it to Beaver, you know. Yes. Father does, yeah. And this is the point. Father does know best. The Homer Simpson mentality of the woman always upstaging the man has to go. And you watch television and you see nothing but female pundits and female broadcasters and female journalists and female spokeswomen, female departments of chair, female CEOs. All of this has to go. All of this has to go. Men, the secretary concept was a man's concept. A man was a secretary or a scribe to a great man. There were no females involved, because having women in the workplace and in school, if I may finish, having women amalgamated into a man's world, first of all, makes the competition no longer between men, but between men and women, which is destructive in and of itself. Moreover, women are a temptation to men, higher divorce rates, higher rates of adultery and fornication. When you go to school, you're there to be a scholar, to promote your race, to promote the race's culture and civilization, not to get some, as the saying goes. School, right now, you look at school, and even if you were to take the Congoids out of it, the problem is even deeper than that of miscegenation. It is the mixing of the two sexes, a constant innervation of the male and the female by the constant interaction between the men and the women. The concept, for example, if you remember, and I hate to bring up Hollywood movies, but The Godfather, when the man was courting the woman, practically the whole family of the woman, it seemed like the whole village was in tow. And that was to ensure that no hanky-panky occurs, and that's the way it has to be. We cannot have this type of animalistic, free-for-all, promiscuous interaction between the sexes anymore. We need a traditional conservative return whereby the genitals are no longer our primary goal. Their satisfaction is not the primary goal, but a higher essence, be it God, be it the state, be it the ethnos, be it the progress of civilization and culture. These are if you will, sacred concepts, as opposed to the profane and animalizing and ultimately negrifying tendencies that we see right now in modernity. Why do Jews push Tin Pan Alley back in the 20s? Why did they push it? Why do they push songs that are teases, songs that are burlesque, or they promote a kind of, you know, a sexuality? Back then it was covert in the 20s. Now it's overt. You go to a club in any major city and you see them grind. They're practically copulating on stage to the most animalistic, congoidal music there is. This has to stop. Back in the 50s, dances were chauffeured. They were chauffeured. That's the correct term. They were chaperoned. Chaperoned is the term I'm looking for. They were chaperoned. The music was bad even then back in the 50s, but it's nothing compared to what you see right now. So the Muslims in Europe do have something above the European counterparts in that they are a conservative, traditional society where men have their place and women have their place, and modesty is being promoted. I saw a demonstration against these radical Pakistani Muslims saying the United Arab, the United English Emirates, Islam will take over England, etc. Now, you know, those people shouldn't belong there, and they should get a swift kick in the rear end and be on the next flight over to UAE and Pakistan, you know, hell on earth, if you will. But the white English Defense League or the British Patriots, the girls were wearing torn jeans, they had piercings in their eyebrows, they had purple hair, they were dressed slobs. There was no cultural continuity in the way they dressed. There was in the Muslims. There was no united musical cultural tradition. There is in the Muslims. There was no religious fervor. Christ or Odin even will take over Islam. There was nothing of that, but the Muslims have a clear goal, God, and they have a clear culture, the Islamic civilization and its history. So European peoples are purposefully and denuded of any cultural and civilizational continuity, and they have been degraded to such an abysmal point that they're reveling in it. They're reveling in the fact.
But IFA, you've got to admit that we've been living in the West with this cancer and this virus festering underneath us for so long, for such a time. I mean, you just mentioned they started this way back in the 20s. You had the promotion of jazz, of swing, and this has been a long plan. And I submit to you that the Jews, and with their power, their supremacist power over Hollywood, eventually they could turn even a Muslim country into what we have become. And I see it every day. I see Muslims that are completely just Muslim in name only, you know, and there's no question if they don't come down, if they're not brought down by the grace of whoever, you know, this is gonna civilization will go out eventually. I mean,
I'm not as far as
patriarchy goes. You know, I believe. I mean, on this network, we're more of a pagan kind of not effeminate, but we like to seek a balance between the sexes. We think a woman has her place, a man has his place. Everything has been reversed. On our last roundtable, we had a huge discussion about this. We even had a couple women on there. And, you know, it's just sad what they've done, how they've divided us. The gender war has been one of their greatest tactics against us. And, you know, they promote black sexuality onto white women, and they promote effeminization and, you know, degrading white men and making them into weaklings. So, you know, this is where we are now as a race until we stand up and say we've had enough of it. I mean, it's, you know, and I believe the spirit is in us to do that. So go on.
I hope so, Dana. I hope the spirit is in us to do that. That might be a point where we differ in that I think at this point, it's so past the 11th hour, and the juggernaut of modernity is so excessively virile that we might have very well passed the point of no return. Now that is something that's debatable, and I don't want to necessarily push that idea. I would like to think of the positive side, because even if we are going to hell in a handbasket, I'm still going to mountain bike. I'm still going to enjoy listening to a bird sing. These are things, or listening to Beethoven, these are things that no matter how bad the situation might be, they still give me meaning and hope. and I have a future to look forward to. But ultimately, I think that you are right on the point that, yes, if the Muslims, if the non-white peoples of the globe were inundated with the spirit of Jewish modernity, they too, actually, even René Guénon, the traditionalist, said that they are folding in or folding over more readily and more quickly than their European superiors. So that in Japan, you have all this Americanization that has wrecked the country as well. And yes, it will come. And that is the policy of MTV, the Jews behind MTV, and all these networks to denigrate the Islamic peoples. And they are winning. I do think that no matter how powerful the push for religion and conservatism and traditionalism are in how important the push is in the Middle East, they still, overall, all of this said, they will not be able to withstand the allure of modernity. Lady Gaga and the way she shakes her hips and the boom boom music that responds to our genitals will supersede the importance of God, whatever concept one has, of the family, of everything that keeps society together. We will, if we could, turn back the clock to values that were used back 50, 60, 70, even 100 years ago, we could win. We could win. That would involve martyrdom. That would involve self-sacrifice. That would involve putting the spirit in front of the genitals. That would involve telling women they cannot be engineers or doctors or surgeons. They have to be mothers and kick out 7 to 10 children. Sorry. And then we have to live up to the idea that we are here not for ourselves anymore, but for the collective good, and amalgamating the collective good with God, be it a pagan or a Christian, whatever concept, will still make it viable. We need a religious fervor that will have a martyr complex to it, and we need an ability to have a Männerbund, have a united masculine front of equally minded men who are hierarchical. A man says, do this. The superior tells the inferior to do that, and the inferior will do it. You know, just because Germans are blonde-haired and blue-eyed, does not mean that you cannot have a janitor who is blonde-haired and blue-eyed. We need to go back to a society where I don't care how blonde your hair is, I don't care how blue your eyes are, but if you're a janitor or you're a plumber, and they are good professions, don't get me wrong, they are necessary for a civilization and a society to function. Street cleaners are very important, and I respect the job that they do. But they must do it. Not every street cleaner is meant to be an MBA or be a CPA. No more. You can't have a four-car garage. You cannot have a four-car garage. You cannot. You have to stay home. You have to father children. You have to be responsible. And no more toys, no more gadgetry. You have to live a Spartan life. Because what's going to happen as society collapses is that more and more sacrifice will have to be made. And I don't think that the Western peoples have it anymore. God knows. I hope I'm wrong, Dana. I really hope I'm overly pessimistic, and that's maybe a character flaw of my own. I hope so, but I don't think so.
If you look at it, it's all interrelated, our plight. The reason – I had a long conversation. I have a friend who I met through my dealings with the Ugly Truth, and he's actually a Somali, or I don't know if he's Ethiopian or Somali, but he's someone from that area. His name is Ahmed, and we have long conversations about the Jews and about white people and the problems and today, and we were discussing all these issues, and I think all these things are connected and interrelated. It's if you just make it a question of modernity versus traditionalism, there's no question that we need to return to a traditional lifestyle. And that goes our mating, techniques. See, the Jews have pushed this kind of romantic concept of love, that you should go out there and find someone that you're really in love with. As opposed to in the East, they have a concept of arranged marriages. You get married to your cousin, someone from down the street, and it's kept within a tight circle. And yes. I think we need to kind of go back to that kind of communal living. And I don't know if it's possible, because in America today, people, you know, you get up, you get a job, you after your college, and then you move like 3-4 states away from your family, you know, so everything is so divided today. United States is really, the whole thing needs to just come down. I mean, that's really the whole, that's the crux of it.
It does. No, it does need to collapse. You're right. And out of the ashes, God willing, a phoenix shall arise. But the situation must be prepped in such a way that something like that will happen. And a friend of mine, he has a website, The Noble Initiative. He is one who is based on traditionalist principles of Sophia Perennis a la Evola and Guénon, is attempting to make nobilism a hierarchical concept of traditional conservative organic living from the earth, if you will, not artificial, not disjointed from nature. She's attempting to make that hierarchical system function. And the way it's done, the way we're beginning here in the state of Arizona, is to make it family through family. Because reaching out to people has, first of all, we have no reaching out potential. We need control of the mass media. We cannot get control of the mass media, because controlling a mass media, or having a mass media outlet, I mean one that viably competes against NBC, CBS, and MTV, is
right,
to subsume a male collective, male collectivity. We don't have that. We're atomized. So there's no mass media. But what we do have, and what worked in the Islamic Revolution of 79 in Iran, was that they had these cassette tapes. They would, men would give to other men, and the families would get around, and they would listen to Ayatollah Khomeini give his sermon. And his sermon was for jihad, was for holy war against the Shah, to bring down the great Satan who supports the Shah, bring down the Shah who is a purveyor of anti-Islamic filth, and to resurrect a golden dawn of an Islamic republic. Guess what? It happened. Those men, of course, still had a religious fervor. Those men came home to women who stayed home and had 6 or 7 children. They were a traditional society, which America was, even back in the 50s and 40s. But we need that kind of family-to-family, individual-to-individual connection, so that we can build a quasi-community, if you will, a kind of compound of like-minded individuals for some sort of potential future. Because everything has been tried, Dana. I would remember when American Dissident Voices under Pierce was out, I would go, and in graduate school, I would pass it out to my graduate colleagues. I almost got kicked out of the program of graduate school because teachers found out, I gave it to some teachers, and fellow students ratted on me because of these talks, these cassette tapes I passed out. But what we need is to go to like-minded individuals. Yes. And we need to go ahead and work on a small and covert clandestine level, if you will. That is the only thing I can see working, because websites are fine. Talk radio is fine. These are good and they are necessary. But we know what the problem is. Whether I'm Iranian or I'm a Nordic Finn, it makes no difference. The truth is truth. And we know what the problem is. We've known what the problem has been. What are we going to do about it? And what are we going to do about it, I think, should be that we are strengthening the bonds of community so that in some faraway future, when the system collapses, the family knocks on the door 30 miles away of the other family and says, let us in, we need your help, and they will let them in, and they're farming the land, and they're guarding the land. Something, just potentially, something could arise from those little family units that will form into a larger unit or a larger group, a collective. And I think the fundamentalist Christian types, a la the Mormons, are a good example in that sole regard of building a hierarchical community, people that know how to take orders and, you know, move that rock to there, and they will not think that everyone is a chief. When we need chiefs and engines, we need both systems. I think we need that kind of a system to make it work. And we need to get back to European culture, European cultural roots. We need to know our art. We need to know our music. We need to know our literature, our poetry, and these have to be living and breathing examples of the superior past. It's not enough to say, oh, I like Shakespeare. Oh, I like Handel or Vivaldi. No, people have to distinctly be flooded with this and really enjoy it. Here's an
example.
That's
why I love,
yes.
I really like Countercurrents, because they're reviving the old philosophical tradition of, you know, bringing up people like Schopenhauer and Nietzsche and all these guys.
Yes, they're great.
It's been lost. I mean, We got a couple callers. Go ahead. You wanted to finish your point quick, and then
I wanted to say a countercurrent. Greg Johnson, he doesn't like me because I'm always the naysayer and if I may call myself a gadfly, I always negate what he says there because he is very pro-homosexual, and he has these people like James O'Meara, who's a noted homosexual, probably a pederast, who promotes his views, and they are, in my opinion, very modernistic. So that's another can of worms, but they are modern.
Yeah, I don't even really want to get into that. I mean, my own views is that I think this whole homosexuality thing, it's really, you know, it's only a problem today because the Jews promote it explicitly out in the open. You know, if we return to a natural traditional lifestyle, it's not even going to be a problem. There's always been homosexuals out there. You know, I mean, as long as there is quiet about it and in the closet. And if you're, you know, I would promote kind of a don't ask, don't tell. I mean, if you are a racialist and you're a good thinker and, you know, you are a homosexual, I'd rather just you not tell me because, you know, it's going to make me look at you in a different way. And I think we really do need collective strength right now because we need to hit that critical mass. Until we hit that mass, we can't change the consciousness of the rest of our race. All right, I'm going to bring up these callers. We got a number I don't know, and then we have someone I do know. So we're going to try this. Hello, sir. Are you just listening, or did you want to make a point? What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Is this me?
Yeah, this is
you. Am I on the air? I had to call in with a restricted number to get on in the queue. So I'm the same caller that called before, and I thought that seeing as I was on the phone this time, I would like to – hi, my name is Emily, by the way, Dana. And,
hi, Emily.
The gentleman that you're with. Hi. I would really like to interject something here as a woman, if I might.
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think that this idea of going back is ultimately flawed. And part of the reason is because, and all this, you know, I listen to you talking and, you know, these feelings come up in me, these ideas, and it's very clear to me, and I think it's because of my gender. But anyway, going back in this idea of National Socialism, and even with the Nietzsche influence, is going back to the flaw with Nietzsche and with National Socialism is that it is imbalanced in the patriarchal and matriarchal unity that has to happen. It's not there. And yes, I do believe that the woman is happiest raising children, cooking, planting flowers. You know, this is what makes a woman happy. But also, women are very wise. And they need to be also given that. You know, I think that we need to create something really new. Well, or it can be really old, like paganism. We can bring that back and add to it. That works. It's got to be something exciting. We can't, you know, Pandora's out of the box now. You can't tell women to go and put on a bib and a little hat. They're not going to do it. They can't. They can't go back. We have to go forward.
I mean, we're relying on things staying the same the way they are. I think if there is a collapse and if we go into survival mode, women will be forced back into the arms of
all of us will be forced. Organically, will be forced. You know, the aristocracy in England, they weren't hanging out in, you know, city streets. They were out in the countryside in huge pieces of land, enjoying the pastoral beauty. That's what inspires. We know that inside us we want to be in nature. That's what has inspired all the great thinkers and creators. And so that will happen, that we go back. But it will happen organically, not with like saying, now you've got to do this. And you know, and people will rise to elevated positions, elite positions, organically. So I do believe that everyone, no, of course we're not all equal, but we need to be given an equal chance. I mean, the table should be level, and then naturally the race that is the greatest will rise. You know, my feeling, well, I should stop now, I've said enough.
Well, no, that's great. I'm glad you called in, Emily, and you know, we definitely appreciate having female callers too, even if we disagree. I mean, as far as National Socialism, you know, they had some of the greatest support from the women of the Third Reich. I mean, the women were crazy about National Socialism and what it gave
exactly.
To help.
It was earned. It was earned because those women were given the respect. Because the German man was who the German man was back then. But with the white male being the white male that he is now, and the female being the female that she is now, it's very hard to go back to that kind of that balance that they did have there. And I'm not against National Socialism. I just see flaws in it. I think we need to build on it and add to it rather than this idea of going back. I think we need to use it as the good parts and then just evolve it.
Well, I agree, because if we go out with a swastika and try to remake something that's already been smashed in the past, instead of just using the symbolism and the archetypes and evolving it into something new, that's a mistake, and I agree with you there. I'm going to put you on mute, Emily. If you want to hang up, you can, and we're going to go to another caller. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's
Dana,
will
I be able to respond to Emily's...
Sure. If you want to respond, go ahead, and then I'll bring up the
caller. Well, I just wanted to thank Emily for calling, and yes, I do. Some points you brought up were very germane to the topic. I, again, think it's a misconception to say that it is an impossibility to go to the past. Obviously, the past brought us the present, and we have to take the good things from the past. And what I recommend in the good things are the culture and the more traditional and conservative roles. Those are definitely the good things. Now, obviously, as Emily said, she's right. Women want to be mothers. The normal woman is a mother and wants to mother children and give birth to them and raise them, etc. And this does not assume any kind of brutishness or thuggishness on the role of a man. The man is not a titan. The man is a leader. And she quoted Nietzsche, and one of my favorite statements from Thus Spake Zarathustra was the following. The man says, I will. The woman says, he wills. And that, I think, essentially encapsulates all religions and all traditions, be they Aryan, Semitic, Chinese, or even Aztec. And this is the normal order of things. The man is the leader, the woman is the follower, found in metaphysics as well. But the issue is that return to this situation of conservative, traditional, healthy, and salubrious life is, it cannot be done by force. We cannot tell people, stop listening to Lady Gaga. People want to no longer listen to Lady Gaga. We have to create a situation whereby women and men no longer want that which is bad. And that assumes replacement by something that is superior to Lady Gaga and Madonna. How that is done, it's a Herculean task. And I don't have all the answers. I don't have a lot of answers, in fact. But I think based on reading works from the past, knowing that by moving forward, we can only truly make progress, move in a forward direction, if we revolve back to the past. And Sophia Perennis, the School of Tradition, states that by invoking the past, the religions and the ways and the height, if you will, of achievements, both aesthetic and gender-related, can we truly progress. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to bring 508 on because he's been wanting to say something for a while. 508, you are here.
Hey, it's Kyle.
Hey, Kyle. How's it going, brother? I know you had a lot of points. You wanted to bring it. You wanted to chime in. So.
Yeah, very interesting conversation. If we look towards the past, let's consider NS Germany and what led to the rise of the National Socialists. That would be the Weimar Republic, when everything was very pornographic and degraded, much like it is today. Now, they didn't go the direction of a very conservative type of Judeo-Christian mold that the 1950s America somewhat was, and the kind of the modesty that was being mentioned. Instead, they went back to their pagan past, and I think this was very, very powerful for them. For example, are you familiar with the sculptures of Arno Breker?
Yes.
He would put people in the nude. It was not pornographic. He showed the beauty, the ideal, the greatness of the Aryan man and woman in their natural state. And I think that's something people would be drawn to, and would start the process of detoxifying people's minds as well. As always thinking about the naked human as being something only sexual. Another point that could be brought up concerning this period would be the film Triumph of the Will, which was a triumph of cinema, which is even rated in our world today as a 7.5 on IMDb. This film was monumental. It was very innovative, and it was done by a woman, Leni Riefenstahl.
Yes.
And my point would be that women should not have to work in the ways that they are doing today, nor do they want to be serving people as waitresses and doing other sorts of meaningless work if they were given a true alternative. And some women are given a true alternative. It's just not the Aryan best of our people that are given this alternative to be given money to be a mother. It's very low-class people and non-whites who are being paid not to work and to be mothers. So when you have a society where having to be a wage slave as a woman to help make ends meet and even to raise a family, to have enough funds to do so, when that is changed, we would enable women to pursue their highest passions and achieve great things, because as Leni Riefenstahl has proved, that is very much possible when they are unleashed upon the world properly. And when we're talking about unleashing, we could also mention the Vril women, who were very important to the success of the National Socialists at the beginning. And one final point I'd like to make before I'll drop off the call is that if you go to the arranged marriage system, you could end up with something like what happens in India. In India, the sexes are pretty much completely separated from the beginning, no interaction with each other, so the boys will all be bonding with boys for their very formative and sexual years in terms of their biochemistry, and many of them end up as homosexuals. And when they get married, they have to lead a secret life as a homosexual because that's all they knew and that's how their brains were formed because of that repressive society, unnatural society in which they grew up. So that's all I had to add, and continue the conversation. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you, Kyle. What do you think? What do you think, IFA? I mean, it's something to think about. This is basically where I stand on these issues. You know, it's as far as I only brought up the arranged marriage idea because, you know, when you look at traditional societies that have this, they tend to have large birth rates. And, you know, our biggest problem is a lack of a birth rate right now. So I only brought it up in that respect. I agree 100% with Kyle on the role of the sexes, the role of division of sexes and how we should strive towards a unity in some way, or a pagan-oriented type of lifestyle. But yeah, go ahead.
Surely.
Go ahead.
Surely. Thank you, Kyle, for calling first and foremost. Let me interject that, no, I think the statement is definitely hyperbolic, to wit that in India, male-male bonding from an early age and female-female bonding can lead towards homosexuality, being it male or of the lesbian variety, respectively. No, I was I came here when I was 9 in 1984. I was bonding only with other boys, and I never turned out to be a homosexual. Actually, I turned out to be quite a philanderer before I got married again. But no, not at all. True, there are higher rates of homosexuality in Islamic societies and whatnot, and that could potentially have something to do with the excesses of extreme Puritanism. You do find that in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states, but overall, no. In traditional Western societies as well, you see a repression of the sexual organs and the human sexuality. All of the paintings of the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, the Virgin Mary is always shown, almost always shown, with covered hair and with her no cleavage on her chest.
no bosom apparent, and she's dressed very modestly, and that is ultimately the idealization of what woman should be, modest, meek, and proper. And what man, potentially what husband, does not want that, want his wife to be that way. But as far as the issue goes, I have to disagree that that kind of sexual separation does not necessarily lead towards homosexuality. You are also talking about an inferior people, the Indians from this South Asia, and so if they do lead more to homosexuality, it's still not going to cause necessarily Westerners to be likewise. But yes, I'm familiar with Arno Brecker, and I think Weimar Germany is not a good example, because ultimately in that society, when Hitler would get up and on his soapbox and harangue the Jews, people agreed with him because people had a collective anti-Semitic sentiment. We don't have anything of this sort. All we have is a collective, if you will, idiocy. We have no cultural roots. We have no unity except rah-rah, wave the American flag and show the bald eagle. We have nothing but the jingoism of the most trite and moronic stripe. Unfortunately, I think bringing the whole issue of National Socialism or Weimar Germany into the situation is not really analogous. Our situation right now is such that it is by far weaker and more untenable than Hitler's was. In Weimar Germany, there was a kind of collective will and a collective sharedness. There is nothing right now here. We have nothing anymore. Our working class is Mexican. Our women are liberated. They sleep with blacks left and right. They abort their children. They have contraceptives that kindly abort the children. And we have men right now that shave their heads and pierce their bodies and tattoo it up and listen to bad music and drink their lives to oblivion and watch the boob tube. We are truly in a much worse situation than Weimar Germany ever was. If Weimar Germany was corrupted by pederasty and feminism and the cabaret, at least it still had a backbone that was truly masculine to give rise to the Freikorps and the Sturmabteilungsmann. We don't have that anymore. We have nothing. We ultimately
the problems are definitely. The problems are magnified, there's no question, and we're living in a multiracial society where whites are on their way to becoming a minority. So, if you know, it is much worse. However, you have the same decadence and filth in both Weimar and the United States, and you have Jewish supremacy as well, because I remember Joseph Goebbels was reading in a speech, he was giving out all the percentages of Jews in lawyers, doctors, all the professions, all the positions of the newspapers and things like this. That stranglehold was there. But today I think it's even worse. I think they're
worse. Dana, forgive me for interjecting. I don't mean to be obnoxious, but thank you. But you're absolutely correct. I concur with you wholeheartedly. Namely, the degeneracy is being created and is spearheaded by the same people now as it was in Weimar Germany. The modus operandi was the same: miscegenation, jazz, feminism, pederasty, homosexuality, and of course, it's a mirror image. It is, but the difference betwixt them is that the former situation in Weimar Germany, there was still a resilient collective masculine will that said, no, we will not allow our women to be hand-in-hand with Senegalese or with Sierra Leoneans. You cannot do that. You cannot go in the streets and flaunt your homosexuality in drag. Disallowable. You cannot. Right. That the father, the husband, would beat his wife, and the neighbors would agree to when the man beat his wife, if she wanted to go out and work as a secretary. They said, stay home and have children. You're a wife now. Be modest and be respectable. So society was unified. We don't have that anymore. We don't have that. Yes, it is analogous in that the modus operandi has been the same. But we have nothing to fight against that right now. If any man stands up and tells a white woman that she is a harlot or she's engaging in zoophilia by copulating with a baboon on two legs, the man would get pummeled by his own fellow white men. Forget the Negro.
Right.
He would get pummeled by them. And what man can stand up and lose his job and no longer bring bacon on the table because of his fellow white men? So we live in fear. What we have right now is a polite totalitarianism, according to a gentleman I once knew. It is the despotic fist, a steel fist covered by a velvet glove, but it is despotic nevertheless. And we are afraid. Why do I use a nom de plume, as silly as my son? I have a real name, like you do, but I'm scared. I'm scared. If I lose my job, it's over. I've recently been married. I want to have children. I want to live. I want to survive, and I want to have a future. And I can't do that if I use my real name. So, and there's no one, not one soul on the right wing that will come to my aid. There is no organization. There is no charity fund. There is nothing. In religions, you find that. The Catholics will do it for a fellow Catholic. The Muslims would do it. The Jews definitely will do it for a fellow Jew. But the white, the right wing has nothing. So we are beyond nebulized, actually. We are defunct. We are lying supine. We are on the road to perdition. We have been on the road for perdition many decades ago, and all we're doing right now is just smelling the stink of the rotting corpse. We are dead. Actually, I do think we are dead. We're just rotting. That's all we have. And the empire is so grand, and it will last for quite a few more decades until everything collapses. And woe betides us when it does fall apart, because I don't think white people will survive in a large enough numbers. White people will be the first ones to go, whether it's going to be a massive orgy fest at the expense of white women, or it will simply be just mowing them down like or breaking into their homes like South Africa or Rhodesia. It will be horrific.
Yeah. I'm not as pessimistic, because I tend to think of collapse as our friend. I think the white race is very resilient. And, you know, the problem today is we've been put into kind of like a trance. You know, we're like zombies. You know, we're under a spell, and when we break out of that spell, you know, the beast within, the wolf that lies within the blood of our people, it's dormant, but it's there. I mean, you know, we are the scariest people on the planet. You know, one time the entire third world had respect because we ran the world, and they know how brutal we can be. I mean, you got to remember that it's all psychological conditioning. When that breaks, when the Jews no longer have the power of dominance within an electronic medium like TV, if people don't care to watch anymore because they're worried about survival, believe me, things can turn around, and we have millions of whites who don't act this way, who aren't lost into this filth that you speak about. So, you know, there are reasons for hope, and that's what we should look towards, you know?
Sure, and no, I ultimately hope that you're right. And even though I naysay and I'm a pessimist, perhaps by nature, I do think I'm being realistic. But even that, let's just say that, let's put that aside. But let's say that, okay, even if we are doomed, what I promote is a positivum, essentially an idea that we must do that which is right. Even if we are tragically doomed, we still must fight. That's the bottom line. You know, for the code of the warrior, whether it's in Bushido, the samurai, or its Nordic counterparts in Europe, is that even if the war is lost, you fight to the last man, because it is the honorable thing to do. This is where the sacred overcomes the profane. And you fight even though you are doomed. And the way I see it, and excuse the whole, showing off terms here, but the way I see it is that even if we are doomed, we still fight. We do what we can. But we should be realistic about the situation. And if we differ on that point, so be it. Thank you.
Right. It's the old, Oswald Spengler had a line about the Roman centurion holding on to his post, even in the, even when the battle was lost. Right.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Yes. Larger than life.
It's true. I mean, these are the values that we need to strive toward. And we had another caller. Yeah. It was a 46 not 460 number, but he dropped. If sir, if you would like to talk to IFA here, we're on with you can call back. And I guess we'll just go forward. We've got about 40 minutes to go. You know, I'm happy. We managed to stream it somehow, and I think it's still recording anyway. So, you know, I apologize for the beginning, guys, if You were listening to Vivaldi. Not that there's anything wrong with classical. That is the heart and soul of our culture. But yes, I think the doom and gloom gets to be a little too much for me because
I understand
how hard it is to live. If you're in a city environment, it might be good to just get out if this kind of thing affects you too much because really this is a cosmopolitan type lifestyle and mentality that we're combating here, you know, as opposed to an agrarian pagan lifestyle that is one with the land, one with the earth and natural. You know, this is like race mixing in the past used to be for losers. You would find a white woman who was fat, who was disheveled and, you know, not intelligent, really low quality whites would be the ones that would mix with blacks. Now you see it isn't like that anymore. Now it's it's an elitist liberal value now to race mix. You see, like in New York City, you'll have upper class blacks with a white and, you know, Asians and, you know, just the whole thing. And I was talking to Ahmed about this and, you know, it just makes me wonder whether the natural instinct for sexual urge will ultimately overcome the natural instinct for self-preservation. And that's what we face as a race because right now the sex has been sold to us and we forgot about the other half. So, yeah.
Yes. And I have to say that I do think what's fascinating about the situation is if you look at the Greek myth, the whole issue of the dichotomy of the sexes comes to vivid fruition in that women have been known in the Greek myths to mate with all sorts of creatures. We have it even in European mythology. For example, the princess kissing the toad, expecting it to be a prince. And isn't that essentially, in a much worse way that we have with white women miscegenating with congoids. But in Greek mythology, we have the birth of the Minotaur was through a woman going in the, if you will, the leather or the skin of a cow and being impregnated by a bull. Or Leda and the swan and Zeus. So, the swan was Zeus, and then he raped the woman. So, essentially, it harkens back to the tale of women engaging in zoophilic unions. And Tiresias, the blind prophet, said that when asked the question of who enjoys sex more, he said woman seven times more. With men, essentially, when the moment of sweet death or the climax, as it's called, is reached, men are just kaput, it's gone. But women can go on and on. And that's very telling because what you see right now in this age of modernity is the reign of quantity over quality. Whereas the Greeks, if you look at the Greek statues, even though they had a pederastic tinge to them, the phallus of the man was small. The phallus of the man was, one might even say, tiny compared to what is being counted now in the age of modernity. Because right now, size matters, whether it's muscles, your toy truck, or your boat, or everything, even your phallus has to be big. And what we see now is who goes in this age of the rule of physique and physiology and physiognomy, who is mixing with whom? The rates, and this is all, of course, anecdotal. I don't have the statistics on this, but we know this to be true. The number of white women, you said the fat and ugly ones would who were, you know, the so-called Walmart shoppers or the ones living in the so-called poor white trash. You see them mixing with blacks. But now you see drop-dead gorgeous Aryan Nordic women from affluent backgrounds mixing with blacks. Take Heidi Klum and Seal, for example.
Right.
And you look at the face of a black man and you say, how could a white woman sleep with a beast like the missing link, a gorilla on 2 feet like that? Well, it's very simple. The gorilla on 2 feet has a phallus the size that would probably make a horse shy away. And he is a caveman. He is all muscle. And you look at his counterpart, the white man.
That's what they promote.
And, exactly. That's what they promote. But unfortunately, what you see here is this age of profanation, this age of despiritualization, where what is inside no longer matters, but what is out, what is without, as opposed to within. No wonder you see white women going with them. And I think what the Greek seer Tiresias, yes, what he said was right. women, and this is, I think, a fallacy for most men, woman is the more sexual of the two beings. Men, and this is interesting because Schopenhauer talks about this, Nietzsche talks about it, the metaphysicians and the Hindu scriptures talk about these as well, that it is a common, if you will, fatuity, a fatuousness of man to think that he is more sexual than woman. Woman is the one whose half of her body from the breast down is built for reproduction, of which intercourse
right.
is a very important part. Man, it is just right there in the pubic region. That's it. Men
and even the
are
hips.
Driven.
The hips are part of it too. I mean, I agree with you. I think with the man, the drive is greater, but the essence of sexuality is greater with the woman. No doubt about that. All right, that 469. That 469 caller is back. I'm going to bring him on, see what he has to say before he drops off. Hello, 469. Did you want to comment or were you just listening? Hello, 469. You're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? All right, he dropped off. All right. You know, I just... Sometimes I don't know whether or not they actually are just here to listen or if they want to comment, but he fell off. But anyway, well, we were talking about sexuality, and this is important because this is the biggest thing that bothers me today is just the way our women are paraded around. And, you know, you have a system where money and power is in the hands of the worst people who don't care, and it's pure materialism, it's crass, it's degrading, and you know, it's just this is why some people say, look, Islam is the only answer, it's the only solution. Christianity, let's face it, Christianity is on its last leg. Now, as a pagan or a person who is a kind of a new age, I'm more inclined towards a syncretic new age philosophical spiritual combination. And I think many people laid the foundation for that in the past. You know, National Socialism itself was more of a religion and a worldview than it was a political ideology, for example.
Yes.
But, you know, that caller is back now. I'm going to try him one more time.
Sure.
Call 469. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. My name is Curtis. I'm calling right now from North Dakota. Can you guys
hear me? Curtis? Yes, we can.
I was way down the show after the broadcast, but I thought for shits and giggles, let me just, you know, take a listen and so forth. Now, I didn't catch the entire conversation, but I think based on what you blokes were discussing, I'm assuming you're talking about miscegenation. I guess it's downfalls and so forth, correct? Or
yes, we are.
Excuse me?
Yep. Yeah, we are. You're right.
Well, I mean, how do I put this, okay? Well, I guess after, you know, almost 30-something years, basically, you know, I guess I recently, within the last, I guess, 4 years, woke up to all the bullshit I was fed about, you know, Holocaust, you know, the Jews doing this. And it turns out that somebody, I guess, whom I'm in contact with, I guess, woke me up to all this. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, okay, you know, everywhere these people have gone, they've been ousted, you know, due to their treacherous behavior. And so forth. And sadly enough, you know, I tried. Now, I hate to say this. I'm going to let you guys right now know this, okay? I'm not white. But the fact is, okay, I tried to wake other white people up to, you know, how they're being deceived as far as, like, this mass immigration issue. And I've told a lot of, you know, these young white men, okay, you know, you need to basically take care of your women because what's happening nowadays is your women are leaving you in mass numbers. And I hate to say this, okay, you guys are a minority right now. Now, if you want to increase your numbers, you need to have more kids and basically pull your head from your asses. That is, have a work ethic and, you know, stop playing Xbox and realize, you know, what the hell is going on in the world. But it seems, you know, when I say this, you know, this is coming from a non-white, okay? That's saying a lot. And
What is your nationality anyway? I'm just curious. What are you ethnically? Are you like a mix or?
You can say that. I'm half Asian, basically.
Okay. And what's the other half? Half white, half Asian, or?
Well, white, basically, yeah.
Okay, okay. Well, that's interesting. Go ahead, continue. You can finish your comment.
I tell people, okay, I mean, diversity, okay, you know, I was fed the bullshit that diversity is the, you know, the best thing since sliced bread. I say to myself, okay, how about this? Our jobs are flocking to China, a, you know, different parts of the Orient, okay? Now let's add diversity to China as overpopulated as already is right now and see what happens. More than likely, okay, if I went to Beijing advocating that, they would kill me where I stand, and they rightfully should. You see, it seems as if, I guess, you know, all these people who bitch about, oh, you know, the white man's this, the white man, I say, look, if you hate it so much, okay, why don't you return to your ancestral home, okay? Take the knowledge that the white man has basically given you and use it to bring your society up to the white man, or even surpass the white man's standards, okay? But it seems, you know, people would rather just, you know, bitch and grouse about that as opposed to take action. You see.
Yeah, they like to live with all the benefits of Western civilization.
Exactly.
And the science and technology. But, you know, when it comes to everything else, they'll jump on board with liberalism and cultural Marxism and attack us at every end. But, hey, you're a good caller, sir. I'm happy you called in. And I want to give more time to Iranians for Irians here because we've only got a half an hour left. But I'll put you on mute and call back another time. It was a good call. Thank you.
Sir?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you to the caller. Am I on? Can you hear me, Dana?
Yeah, you're here. I can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you to the caller. Yes, he brought up some salient points. I actually think it behooves him and everyone else, be they of European or non-European descent or of mixed descent, what have you, to support essentially the goose that lays the golden egg. He's right. The Western peoples, the people of the Occident, are becoming a minority. That is simply due to the fact that they are essentially children of modernity. They are, just like Tacitus said in Germania, they are essentially dealing with frivolities and profanities as opposed to with sacred duties and with the future. They are essentially worrying about what to dye their hair as opposed to, you know, giving birth to innumerable children. So he's right about this. He's right about this. But it is a situation whereby, I don't know if he's aware of this, but most non-whites still to this very day, even if colonialism is over, unfortunately, many non-whites still look up to whites as some sort of a deity or some sort of god, in that these white people are remembered as individuals who brought over antibiotics, brought over law and order, and even Indians to this very day, they might hoot and holler, and Iranians as well, but when you get down to it and you talk to them and you have a real meaningful discussion, they will say, that's right, the British did this, that's right, the Americans did this, and the Germans did that, and they remember these things. And it will behoove us behoove them to realize that even though if Nordic man, if Western man is dying and he's falling down, to still give him help up. Unfortunately, the majority of non-whites, though, do not think that way, and they would rather stomp on his neck and bring him further down and degrade him even more. Unfortunately, that's a majority. But there is still a minority of non-whites out there from all the races that still view Westerners with a great deal of respect, and I think it will probably make those who are non-white and those who are of mixed descent to look upon it and think of on what I said. I do think that ultimately, if anyone is mixed or is non-white, that does not entail naturally and obviously that they should be unproud of themselves or have problems with who or what they are. They should be happy. They should be psychologically healthy, if you will. But that still doesn't obfuscate the point that we know who the goose is that lays the golden egg. That's it, I think, on that point.
Right. You know, it raises all kinds of interesting questions, too, because the more mixed the world gets, you know, I always say that if Hitler was around today, boy, he would have a problem trying to figure out, you know, a classification system of who are we going to accept? You know, what do we do in this case? You know, this guy's you know, half quarter this, 5% that. I mean, it's just the world is getting so complicated now. And I call this the white question, you know, and to make it even more confusing, you have different religions involved. I mean, you have Bosnians who are Muslim, but they're European. and
exactly.
You know, there's all kinds of caveats and different.
But as time progresses and we get further mired in this morass, things become more difficult. The situation becomes ever more taxing and ever more difficult in extricating ourselves from it. So ultimately, until we can even come to the point of discussing an issue like this, who stays, who goes, etc., we have to start building that community of European people within America and strengthening that sense of collectivism, that sense of collectivity and collective responsibility, like those fundamentalist Mormons do, to strengthen us for the possible for the definite conflagrations that will be falling on our heads in the future.
Right, yeah. It's going to take a million different strategies. You know, I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all solution or a universal way out of this thing. I don't think there's one religion or one system or philosophical strategy that we can all jump on board. I am in favor of simplifying things and breaking it all down to the most basic principles. Race is probably one of the foundational ones right there. And, you know, it's just we have to try to appeal a message and break through somehow. I mean, we don't have the media, so how do we do it? I mean, you know, it's that's the issue is the consciousness of our people. My friend who runs Mind Weapons in Ragnarok, he basically says the white race is like, you know, Skynet in the Terminator. It hasn't been turned on yet. It hasn't reached self-awareness or, you know, come to the point where it's recognized. It knows who it is. You know, it doesn't have that yet. But when it does, you better watch out. I mean, because that collectivization of our consciousness is what will be the deciding factor whether we win or lose. And by that, I mean pure survival. So you're right. How do we break through to our own people, and how do we start the practical move of got the Northwest Front, you've got John DeNugent in Pennsylvania wants to start his own thing over there, you've got all kinds of groups. I just think where we stand, where we are, we have to stand our ground. We have to find each other, network, and you start a group, I start a group, and then we all converge together in one big mass movement
My colleague, like my friend and buddy John Maelstrom brought up the issue of his noblism, his noble initiative, and on his website too. He's also on Facebook, by the way. He is promoting, like I said, this return to a hierarchical collectivism that we should, I think, truly we should be emulating, in that if you have your own business, if you will, or your own group in your neck of the woods, and I have it in mine, we need to build community. We have strength in numbers. We need to resurrect that masculine bond and form that communal, communitarian collectivism so that we have a backbone. You look at these organizations, the Northwest Imperative, the Northwest Front, the yada yada, the National Alliance, all of these have gone belly up. Every single individual American nationalist organization has ended up being supine and finally been obliterated, divided into fractious factions that do nothing but self-sabotage. And we cannot, these organizations will never amount to anything. We need to build community so that the neighbors know one another and they are fortified, so that in the coming maelstrom, we will be able to have one another to fall back on. You know, it's like these zombie movies you see nowadays. Of course, we have something worse than zombies. They're called blacks. And Mexicans, they're worse than zombies. I would rather have zombies any day than blacks running around and Mexicans.
Well, the zombies are our own people. Our own people are the zombies. You know, that's how I look at it.
Well, yes, of course. But I mean by the zombie apocalypse, where these zombies are out there to eat us. And what do people do? People join forces. The lone wolf form packs. Now, of course, what Hollywood promotes as some sort of multiracial faction is a pipe dream. The first thing that the black would do is probably rape all the women in the group that's fighting off the zombies, and then probably he himself would revert to cannibalism, you know, TNB. But the point is that we need something like that. Namely, we need a white group that sticks together. there is no assured success in the future, because everything based on everything we've seen has been abject failure. The past century and the current burgeoning century have seen nothing but the collapse and the senescence of Teutonic man, of Western man. So what we need is something that will, even if it doesn't work, it is still a dutiful responsibility. It is still something we must, like slaves, we must follow through with and piously perform, and that is building community. And we must.
Right.
You have people around you. You must marry. You're a young guy. Get married. Find a girl that has pretty close, similar views to you. Have children with her. Have lots of children with her. Don't have two cars. Have one car. Have two jobs, but have five kids. Have six kids. Raise them right. Raise them conscious and raise them Occidental. That's what you need. Numbers. We need numbers. And then you are able to join with others in your neighborhood who think likewise. They too will have children. You will have shindigs. You will have potluck potluck get-togethers. You will celebrate one another's birthday. You will celebrate a coming together of people by blood, race, culture, and nationhood. We need something like this. We need to build something that's organic as opposed to artificial and inorganic. Organizations of the mind do not amount to anything. Websites are great, but they do not amount to anything. You need real blood and bone and sweat organizations where people help each other out, and the guy needs his yard raked, and he calls over his like-minded, racially conscious buddy who does it for free. Actually, he just barters a bag of potatoes for it so that he has potatoes for the next 2 weeks for the family.
Well,
we need that kind of agrarianism.
This is how Jews work. This is why the Jews are so successful, because they stick together. They're the most cohesive group of people on the planet.
Really?
And, you know, that is something to be admired. The way I look at it is I really have gotten past, personally, I've gotten past hating the Jews for what they do. Even to us, I've gotten past it, because I've come to see the Jew as a creature in nature that is an enemy, and he is going to do what he is. He can't get past his own nature. So it's to be expected. And it's almost like nature has created this conflict. It has set up this duality where we have a warring, an enemy. We have something to fight. It gives us almost like a purpose or a something to overcome, something to And he's a crafty. He's a as an enemy. You know, he is a worthy adversary. You can't underestimate it. So you know, and that's
truly
not to say that look, they're all in on this together. But we know how they work as.
No, of course
not.
But it is such a banal and trite subject, as far as I'm concerned, namely the Jews, in that we know what they've done. We know what they're doing. Now they're big in the homosexual movement, which is going to be the pederastic movement, which is going to be the zoophilic movement. We know these things. But these things are also in their collective ethos, because they are modernists. They are bringing everything down. We know that. But what are we going to do that will undo this? What are we going to replace the LGBT mantra with? Community, collectivism, large families, sacrifice, giving away to that collective entity and sharing with it. We need community. We need an organic community where meeting each other once every 2 years at an IHR conference to discuss why the gas chambers are a historical fallacy or a hocus pocus is not going to change the situation. We know what the problem is, Dana. We've known for decades.
Right.
And all we do
right.
is talk about it. But what really comes about is, what are we going to do about it? Get married, have six kids, find the right woman, have six kids, live in a little poverty. That's fine. But poverty makes you strong. Having a four-car garage will not. We have to stop following the American dream of gadgetry and more toys to play with. We need to follow the American dream that conquered Ohio and Indiana from the wagon burners and the engines and took America back, that built North Dakota into farmland, that was able to defeat the horrible Sioux and the Nez Perce and just decimate their populations. This is what we need. We need that old West attitude, women doing their chores, men doing theirs. That's what we need.
And, you know,
everything else is talk.
I see that I see that as a very pagan thing too. I mean, because you had you had the mountain men, the wild, untamed, you know, almost Viking like American going out there to in the wilderness, in the forest, and you know, he had to fight Indians, manifest destiny. You know, he was one with the land, the cowboys. I mean, this is the romantic conception I have of the United States. And you know, it's not to say I'm not an Indian hater. I think they were inferior, but they did have a spirituality that was connected to the soil.
Europeans
had that before Christianity. And I guess that's the last thing I'd bring up is I don't know, what are your views on this? Because I see you're very pro-masculine, which is kind of tied to the Abrahamic model. Now, Europeans, basically, I look at Christianity and liberalism as, you know, just, I look at liberalism as a secularized version, just like Marxism, of Christianity. You know, I think it's in its last stages, because in this era of decay, you know, we're going to have a whole new paradigm, because we have the breathing room to create something completely new. And by new, it means half of it is just going back to the past, our traditions.
Yes.
So, how do you see this whole thing?
All right. I am, my viewpoint on the whole religion situation is that every time I go into a Roman Catholic church, I don't feel this when I go into a Protestant church at all. I think Protestant churches are actually very Hebraic in that they are minimalist and sparse and have very much of that, that very minimalist attitude of sola scriptura, and very bereft of the beauty and the tradition, the rich tradition and tapestry of Western, of any civilization and culture. But anyway, that's another issue. But when I go into a Roman Catholic church, or especially cathedral, I want to give them Roman salute, because what I see in front of me is the art, the sculpting, the architecture, the masonry, and the music of Teutonic man, of Western man, be it in Salamanca or be it in Warsaw. What you see is the love of the people and the culture exuded in those places of worship. I am not anti-Christian. I am not anti-Catholic. I'm not anti-Islamic. I do believe that they are still living faiths, and there is no reason why they cannot be resurrected. We have a living, breathing faith right there, especially with Roman Catholicism in its conservative Bishop Williamson, go crusader mentality. That type of religion is very vivid and very alive and virile, in my opinion. It is directly, organically connected to the past. It cannot just be waylaid for any kind of new religion, etc. If a new religion comes out, then that is for the future generations to see and play with. But as far as practicality is concerned, no, it's quite viable. Yes, I do have problems with the Hebraic heritage of Christianity. Yes, I do think there's a problem with our heroes being from the Levant, being, you know, Jeroboam and Ezekiel and Elisha. I don't like the Protestant emphasis on the Old Testament, nor on the Jewishness of the Old Testament, whether you want to call it the Israelites or the Hebrews. I don't like it. I think our gods have to be from Uppsala and from Bergen and from the Rhineland, like Wagner. But the matter of the fact is, according to Spengler, that we have pseudomorphosis, which means we have taken what was not ours. I mean, the cosmic truths are every part of every civilized humanities, whether it's China or the Aztecs. If you are civilized and cultured, the eternal verities, the truisms of good is just and justice being of God, these are found in all advanced peoples. These are eternal verities. That doesn't change, be it Semitic or Indo-European. But we have taken, or what has been foisted upon us in the form of Christianity, is still, it's pseudomorphized. It is Teutonicized. It is Nordicized. And these saints and the Catholic hierarchy, even though their essence might be Hebraic, they have undergone a metamorphosis to become Nordic. And you have Christ depicted as a blonde-haired, blue-eyed man. He looks like a Viking in the paintings. And as long as we emphasize the westernness of Christianity, as long as we westernize it and we make it into a racially, national, socially constructive force, like a lot of Catholicism was in the past few centuries as a vanguard against Jewry, there is nothing wrong with it. The crucifix, if I may finish, the crucifix is needs to be in the face of the fanatics of Islam as a living force. We will not defeat them because Odinism and all of these things, as interesting as Sartre, as interesting as they might be, and I hope I don't step on any toes, these are simply just, straw men. These have no living force. It's been rooted out of us. It is no longer a living faith, like Zoroastrianism for the Iranian nation. Islam is a foreign force. Islam is Arabic. It's Semitic. Iranians have an Indo-European heritage. They had a Zoroastrian heritage. But except for a minuscule population of the country, which still remains as Zoroastrianism, the majority of the nation is Shia Islamic. And Shia Islam has undergone, again, a pseudomorphosis, according to Spengler, to become a valid and living part of Iranians. It has been a new graft. We have grafted a branch on a different tree, but that branch now has become part of that tree. Sure, the heritage is still there. The evolutionary heritage of our Arabic Islam is still there, Dana, but it is now Iranian. The Shia Islam and the what we call Ashura Taswa, which is the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, it has become Iranianized, and it is part and parcel of the Iranian people and their ethos. There's nothing wrong with it anymore. We just need to stress the Iranian aspect of it. We need to stress the European, Teutonic, Nordic aspect of Catholicism. And Protestantism, of course, has been concomitant with usury and with extreme individualism and venture capitalism, has gone away from the rootedness, the cultural richness of Western man as it's expressed in Catholicism. You cannot, I don't know if you've ever been to the Vatican. I have been to the Basilica of St. Peter. It is one Sieg Heil after another. That place is the apotheosis of the art, the music, the sculptings, all the attributes and exuberances of Nordic man. That place is Europe. Well, Vatican is Europe. I cannot see it as some sort of alien force anymore.
We got 9 minutes left, and I'm going to try to really respond to that because you gave me a lot there. I think,
I apologize.
As far as this goes, you know, that's kind of the response that I would have expect to come from you, and I really think that I understand the looking at the brilliance and magnificence of the cathedrals and all the art and and all the masonry and all this stuff, but. Look, I mean, Bishop Williamson is, look what the Catholic Church did to him, okay?
Sure,
basically kicked him right out. The Pope is working for the Jews. The Catholic Church is no more. The 90% of the Catholics today are going to be Hispanics, Africans, and Asians. And, we can't live in the past. That's why I think, Julius Evola, the traditionalist, he argued that it wouldn't be honest or authentic to try to just start worshiping Zeus or Odin and go back to something that's been it's been removed from us. However, I think that moving into the future, we're going to definitely need a synthesis of spirituality and philosophy and something like National Socialism that put this all into a Weltanschauung. And, the issue we're facing today is really religion has collapsed. Now, whether you like Christianity or you are against it, it's really kind of removed from Indo-European life everywhere, whether in Europe or America. I mean, you got these crazy Christian Zionists over here, these Protestants, but these people really don't represent real Christianity, and as far as I'm concerned, they're wannabe Jews. I think because religion has been removed, that left a void. It left a vacuum, and it wasn't replaced by anything. And that's another big reason why we're in such a crappy situation today. So we're going to have to find something as a race, and there may not be one easy answer, but I think we have to look at the theology and the slave morality of Christianity and just the whole essence of what it preaches today. It preaches miscegenation. It preaches worship the Jews.
Yes.
I mean, if it's not on the right, you have it's saying you know, the Jews are the chosen race, and on the left it's saying that we're all one in Christ, and, you know, go help the Africans, give the Africans money.
Yeah.
They need money because they're dying of.
Well, Dana, Dana, you are correct. Far be it from me to disagree with you on this point. I agree with you, namely that the church has become the handmaiden of the devil of modernity. It has. There's no doubt about it. But it wasn't this way. It wasn't this way that the Catholic Church was a big bulwark against Jewish modernism, modernity. It was a bulwark against much that was bad. But the church made some big mistakes, like the Islamic, if you will, community has made mistakes in throughout the Islamic world as well, one of which I might name E. Michael Jones and his culture wars went to the Hollywoodism conference a few months ago in Iran, and he quoted a news source whereby the supreme leader, Ayatollah Khamenei, rued and he asked God for forgiveness because they promoted birth control for the population, and now the women are out there getting jobs as opposed to having children. And he said that God will curse us for this, and I think he's right. However, that does not obfuscate the issue that the church did a lot of good. But what we see right now is that every aspect of Western society is tainted and contaminated. That's why I'm saying everything has been, the rug has been pulled from underneath us. We no longer have a God. We no longer have a church. We no longer have morality. We no longer have any kind of union, any kind of salubrious system. This is why I have the cynical and pessimistic views I do of the West. And if anything will resurrect, I think practically, and even Evola in his book you're quoting, in Men Amongst the Ruins, he states it too. He makes a very bad case for the church. This was written back in the, I believe, the 70s when he died. I think he died in 74. And he himself saw that no help will come from the Catholic Church, essentially, if the church fixes this, if it fixes that. We are beyond salvation. I really think the situation is horribly defunct. But if we were to resurrect something, what is going to the past is not necessarily, as people say, a bad thing. Better music was in the past. Better art was in the past. Men and women were better in the past. Why can't we emulate them and call out that which led to their demise, now that hindsight is 2020 and we have hindsight? That's what I'm promoting. That not to go and act as if nothing, everything is hunky dory. No, we have learned from the mistakes, I hope, but we emulate back then. People, factory workers back in the 60s, I had a former teacher whose father came home from the steel mills of Pittsburgh and put on a Brahms symphony. You look at movies from the 30s, men and women in one of these movies with Dana Andrews, they were dating, getting to know one another, and their mutual interest was Brahms' Symphony No. 1. Who has even heard about Brahms and his Western today? Most people think Beethoven is a Saint Bernard. People don't know anything about their history anymore.
Disgusting.
You see, so we have been hoodwinked, we have been dumbed down, we have been negrified, we have been bestialized, we have been sodomized, we have been everything that is imaginable has happened to Western society courtesy of the Sanhedrin. What are we going to do? That's the $64 question. And
right.
I think the situation is so beyond hope, and it will keep getting worse and worse and worse. We will see the legalization of pederasty. We will see the legalization of bestiality.
My closing comment to this would be, look, you have to look at this as a process, and we're living in the dark side of the coin. This is going to pave the way for a brutal retaliation or a natural pendulum to swing. I mean, this is going to happen.
Only pendulum will be against us, and the only brutalization that will happen will be against us, because our numbers do not have it anymore. We are no longer racially cohesive. We are doomed to extinction. I really am of that opinion, except for small pockets. And if any kind of phoenix arises from these small pockets, my fingers are crossed. I hope so. God willing, inshallah, something like that will happen, but I highly doubt it. We could very much see the extirpation of Nordic man from the population. And then the yellow, advanced yellows, will take the place of Nordic man, but probably even they will succumb to the lure allure of modernity that these that the Yids have created, which has become such a juggernaut that even they have lost control of it. I really think that the situation is abysmal. It really is abysmal.
It is.
I hope I'm wrong.
At it right now, it is. And looking at it as from a Christian perspective, or looking at it from, you know, the past and what was lost and what changed and how, you know, how things are different today, people holding on to these old paradigms are going to be much more depressed than people who are thinking in a revolutionary, futuristic ideal. And that's how I look. I basically look at collapse and all the sickness around us today as indicative of a civilization in decay and dying and basically a corpse. And what comes in the future is going to be what we decide, how we decide to the opportunities given to us when the system itself is no longer viable and no longer has any power.
I'm going to ask you to come back.
We only have a minute left. So IFA, IranianSforArians.com. It was a pleasure to speak
thank
with you.
Dana. It was a pleasure.
2 hours. And, absolutely. Thank you for coming on.
I look forward to being reinvited, and it has been very magnanimous for you to have me here. And I hope we have more callers next time. It really is quite interesting and quite invigorating to have been on your show.
Okay, excellent. I'm gonna close it out, and we will see you when you come back. Take care.
Good day. Bye.
All right, guys. I'm just gonna play a quick song for the last minute. Take care, guys.